Well, ladies and gentlemen, first of all, before, and you know, very often I say that midway into the program, but first of all, before I do anything else, I have to greet our newest affiliate in the ever-growing and yet constantly the same size Le Show Network. Hello, Louisville. Yeah, I said Louisville. I figured it out. Louisville, Kentucky, ladies and gentlemen. We're bringing Le Show to Louisville for the first time, and I would explain the broadcast, but I don't understand it myself. So it's, you've heard of viral marketing in the computer world, where or in the youth culture, where instead of actually advertising something, word of mouth is spread either through email trees or street teams or things like that. It's called viral marketing. Well, think of this broadcast and think of your experience with this broadcast, our new listeners in Louisville, as fungal broadcasting. That is to say, it grows on you. Now, ladies and gentlemen, a couple weeks ago, you may remember, I asked the question, isn't the abandonment of mutually assured destruction, I know we're getting deep into deterrence theory here early in the broadcast, isn't the abandonment of that theory, which is at the base of the missile defense plan of the Bush administration, doesn't that depend on assuming that heads of nation states are no longer rational? Because the premise for deterrence was, you hit us with anything and we'll smash you to smithereens with our nukes. And the further premise that was based on was, any leader of any country, no matter how wacky, is rational enough not to want his country destroyed by nuclear weapons. Okay, I asked the question. Today comes the answer from Colin Powell on Meet the Press. Trying to defend, or actually defending, he wasn't trying anything. He was defending the missile defense policy of the administration. Asked, well, you know, the Europeans are against it, and the Russians are against it, and the Chinese are against it. Not that those are arguments, but just posed with that query, he says, well, we have to deal with a new world, Tim. We have to deal with states, I'm quoting Colin Powell now, states that don't operate by the same set of rational rules, unquote. So we're betting hundreds of billions of dollars that Saddam Hussein isn't rational enough to know that he doesn't want his country destroyed by nuclear weapons. That's the bet. Or that Gaddafi, or any enemy you might pick in the world, any rogue, Bin Laden, doesn't mind having his whole thing wiped out by nuclear weapons. So we have to do something else. That's the premise now, fully made real, at least made cogent, at least made clear by Colin Powell, our Secretary of State, today. So thank you for answering my question, General. And he also made clear what is the single newest, weirdest locution in Washington. You know, people in Washington are constantly being consulted and handled in ways to attract our attention. And for years, I don't know if you watch the chat shows, the Washington Yak shows, but all the pundits and punditesses and punditillos were apparently taught to begin their sentences by saying either look or listen. Pat Buchanan picked that up right away. Look! And people would stop. I don't know why, but they would. All the pundits started using look or listen as handles to sort of grab a bit of the ear of the listener. Now, not only pundits, but office holders have adopted a new one. And I think it's great because there's no pretense that this is not totally a trip back to the schoolyard. Colin Powell said it today a couple times, and you'll hear it more and more from people in Washington if you care to listen to people from Washington. They'll say, guess what, before announcing something they want to tell you. As in, well, you know, you keep hearing about the climate change, but guess what? The climate's not changing. Senators say it too. Guess what? It's the big new attention getter in Washington. Listen for it. That's, guess what? The advice from me. Hello, welcome to the show.
Show it. Pretend you're glad, my heart. Although you're sad, my heart, he mustn't know it. Remember, love is not an easy game. No two hearts ever beat quite the same. Go on and dance, my heart. Our only chance, my heart, is to forget it. Should you despair, my heart, he'll know we care, my heart, and we'll regret it. If it's to be, we soon shall see, and if it's not to be, no power on earth can make it so. Pretend it's spring, my heart, go on and sing, my heart, for if you sing, he'll never know. it is. Should you despair, my heart, you'll know we care, my heart, and we'll regret it. If it's to be, we soon shall see, and if it's not to be, no power on earth can make it so. Pretend it's spring, my heart.
From the edge of America, from the home of the homeless, I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to an inhale, an exhale, and this edition of the show in that discernible order. One of the things we do for our friends in Louisville who are hearing this broadcast for the first time, we track, thanks to a wonderful column in the local dog trainer, i.e. daily newspaper, dog trainer, of the real estate transactions of the stars, because it's a celebrity culture. Actor David Schwimmer has purchased a Hancock Park house for $5.5 million. Wow. The home, on slightly more than an acre, has 9 bedrooms in 11,000 square feet. That's one for every friend, plus, ooh. Built in 1926 but recently remodeled, the home also has a sitting room, dressing room, 2 fireplaces, a tennis court, pool, spa, and grounds with a guest house, and 3-car garage. Singer-actress Courtney Love, and then the rest of the piece is filled with his credits. And then they say it comes from the realtors, you see, who happen to know what miniseries he's in. This is what amazes me about this column. This is why I keep harping on it, ladies and gentlemen. Singer-actress Courtney Love has purchased a West Side home for about $2.3 million. Of course, I leave out the credits. Built in the 20s, the Spanish-style house has 4 bedrooms and 3,700 square feet. The property, about 2/3 of an acre, is hidden by shrubs and trees. Love sold her former home in the Hollywood Hills for about $4 million in April. At the time, she said she wanted to buy a smaller home in L.A. because she planned to spend more time in New York. And now she buys a 4-bedroom house in L.A. again. Did you not like New York, Courtney? Because I don't blame you. Barbara Sinatra, widow of Frank, has purchased a Westwood penthouse for $3 million. The unit has 4 bedrooms and 5,600 square feet. Sad story. I don't even want to go there. All right, ladies and gentlemen, that's exactly how hot the property is today. But I have been in the vanguard, I'm proud to say, of those picking up on the stories from the General Services Administration and the General Accounting Office, saying there was no White House vandalism at the end of the Clinton administration, at the start of the Bush administration. So where are the apologies? Well, a couple of interesting stories following up on that this week. First, from the ombudsman of the Boston Globe. Now, I have to preface this by saying the Boston Globe ran an absolutely fallacious, and I don't complain about this stuff. I say this just as background so you understand the ombudsman of the Boston Globe. The Boston Globe ran an absolutely mendacious story about yours truly in January of this year, including quotes about things I never said and an involvement in a show I'm not involved in. Aside from that, it's all true. And I wrote to the ombudsman of the Globe saying, hey, and wrote to him again with a second set of hays and then a third set of hays and then to the editor of the paper saying, hey, your ombudsman didn't respond to the hays, and still, 4 or 5 months later, nothing. So now, this from the ombudsman of the Boston Globe. He was busy on this. As he recapitulates the story of the vandalism, the details were startling. Walls have been desecrated with obscene graffiti, filed cabinets glued shut, telephone wires cut, presidential seals steamed off doors, and pornography left on fax machines. So extensive was the damage, a communications worker was said to have been reduced to tears, and a national magazine hinted that the White House was spending $10,000 a day to repair phone systems damaged by departing Democrats. The Globe's Washington Bureau was filing stories that were skeptical at a time when Bush aides were privately promoting the story. At a briefing on January 25th, Bush Press Secretary Ari Fleischer deceptively encouraged reporters' suspicions while refusing to confirm or deny reports of damage. So he's just patting the Globe reporter who didn't fall for that and wrote a skeptical story. The ombudsman is congratulating his own newspaper. Fox News acknowledged on the day the GAO report became public there had been little evidence to support the vandalism claims. Fox News did apparently move to correct the error and was the only one of the media outlets to do so. Wow, maybe they are fair and balanced. Who knew? And then at the end of the week, Ari Fleischer rises to, in fact, release a list of the damage allegedly done by outgoing staffers of Clinton and Gore. Obscene graffiti in six offices, one 20-inch-wide presidential seal ripped off a wall, 10 telephone lines interfered with, and 100 computer keyboards with the W removed. Most of the incidents described by Fleischer were said to have occurred in the Eisenhower Executive Office building, not the White House. It's adjacent to the White House. Pornographic or obscene greetings, wish they'd make the distinction plain to me, were left on 15 telephone lines in the offices of the Vice President and White House Counsel and in the scheduling and advance offices. These details were provided to the Washington Post after days of inquiry about the degree of White House cooperation with the investigations that said there was no damage to White House real estate. White House officials had said they did not release the information sooner because of Bush's desire to move forward and not live in the past. And yet, according to the Boston Globe's ombudsman, the Bush people were privately encouraging newspapers and news media to follow this story. Fleischer said the written list was prepared Friday based on the recollections of officials and career government employees. Fleischer said the catalog of damage consisted of mental notes kept by one aide. We tried to be gracious, he said, but the last administration would not take graciousness. By getting the information out, we hope to put an end to this so everyone can go on with the policy and the business of the government. The only incident Fleischer described in the White House itself was a photocopier in the West Wing that had pictures of pictures of naked people interspersed with blank photocopy paper so deep in the tray that they were still popping out weeks after the inauguration. Well, that's more work than a lot of the Clinton people did while they were in office, so you got to give them credit for that. You know, that's planning. That's more strategy, at least, than they showed in a lot of it. All right, it's Sunday. That means the news is full of things that should frighten you. Here we go. More than 1 in 10 British children are carrying superbugs resistant to one or more antibiotics. The proportion of adult carriers could be even higher. The superbugs are no immediate threat to those carrying them, but could cause dangerous infections after an operation, for example. Carriers can also infect other people. The finding has serious public health implications, warns the author of the study. This is in New Scientist magazine. This may be just the beginning of something that will take off in a big way. You know, if you were a peddling a stock with that, you'd be called up on charges before the SEC, mister. This may be just the beginning of something that will take off in a big way. We need policies to control antibiotic resistance that go across boundaries, he says. Okay. Every 10th British child you meet is carrying a superbug. Jamaica is considering legalizing marijuana. And look what's happening up our neighbor to the north. Look what our neighbor to the north is doing. A new Canadian Parliament Committee on Drug Matters will look at decriminalization. Conservative Party leader, I believe that means the same thing up there as it does down here, but you never know, Joe Clark is urging the elimination of criminal penalties for possessing a small amount of pot. It's unjust to see someone, because of one decision one night in their youth, carry the stigma to be barred from studying medicine, law, architecture, or other fields where a criminal record could present an obstacle. Wow. Pot smokers can't be architects, huh? That explains it. The government has proposed, this is the Canadian government, has proposed expanding medicinal use of marijuana, and the Canadian Medical Association Journal recently supported full decriminalization. Wow. Canada, ladies and gentlemen. On the other hand, the Jamaicans worried that legalizing marijuana might displease Uncle Sam, and so they're taking that into consideration. But U.S. anti-drug activist like Robert McGinnis of the Family Research Council worries that there might be a spillover effect from Canada. It will have a residual effect in this country of depressing prices and making marijuana more available, he says. And he thinks a shift by Canada would boost the arguments of American advocates for easing drug laws. We find our allies are piling up on us and making it more difficult to fight drug use, he said. And just another reason, ladies and gentlemen, to love Canada, huh? Oh, was that wasn't my that wasn't my previous policy, was it? I had the other policy. Trent Lott, the soon-to-be Senate minority leader, is not happy about that. You know, he put a nice smiling face on the fact that the Senate is changing from Republican control to Democrat control, thanks to the defection by Republican Senator James Jeffords of Vermont becoming an independent. He put a smiley face on it last week, but yesterday, Trent Lott sent out a memo which accused Jeffords of a memo to his fellow Republican senators. Of course, it got leaked. A memo accusing Jeffords of a one-man coup for changing parties. And he said, did Trent Lott in his memo, that although the Democrats might take control of the Senate because they now have a plurality, since Jeffords is not a Democrat, the Democrats have a 50 to 49. So they don't have a majority, they have a plurality. But Trent Lott says, quote, the Democrats lack the moral authority of a mandate from the voters, unquote. As, you know, in the current political situation, ladies and gentlemen, that's a dangerous thing for a Republican to be saying, don't you think? Quote, quoting Trent Lott, the Democrats lack the moral authority of a mandate from the voters, unquote. You think he got any, guess what, Trent? Somebody else lacks that, too. Guess what? A high-tech company that was invested in by the heir of Rupert Murdoch has fallen into bankruptcy with huge debts. OneDotTel. It operated a mobile phone network and internet service provision in Australia, as well as a discount telephone call business in Britain. Lachlan Murdoch dragged his reluctant father into investing in the operation. Now, well, see, this internet not going to be here for long. And finally, ladies and gentlemen, in the top of the week's news, and I know this will come as a shock to so many of us in and around show business, internal documents obtained by the Los Angeles dog trainer indicate that several independent record promoters keep detailed logs, called banks, listing the date a radio station airs a song that they're promoting, followed by a dollar amount collected from the artist's label. The stations that add the most songs over the course of a year build the biggest banks and consequently earn the largest fees. The promoter makes deposits when the right songs are played and withdrawals for the station to receive payment in the form of cash, travel, and tickets to events. Each of the five major record companies paid fees to an independent promoter associated with a Portland radio station that played songs produced by their labels. Officials for these record companies declined to be interviewed. Experts say the newly disclosed bank data could threaten the licenses of numerous stations. In the 50s, they called it payola. In the 21st century, we call it, guess what? Payola.
Shoveling snow. I parked him in the front yard up on blocks. looking for a late model love. Something with style that I won't grow tired of. I'm looking for a late model love. Down at the garage, I found the perfect pickup with bucket seats, shiny chrome. Ooh, I wanna take the Jimmy home. We went for a spin, it took a jump to start him up. Blowing smoke and running rough, we went around the block. That was enough. I want a lover with that new car smell. Leather seats always fill me with lust.
Maps in the glove box and tread on the tires.
And all these body parts should be free of rust.
Free of rust.
Now I'm looking for a late model love.
A turbocharged Ram.
Just what I need. All muscle, no brains.
Come on down.
How about a sassy little swinger?
I see they had to straighten the frame.
Well then, little lady, why don't you try a fully loaded Escort?
I bet the finish is scratched.
You look like you could use a nice clean probe.
You know, that's really a sexist name for a car. I'm looking for a late model. Looking for a late model love. Something with style that I won't grow tired of. I'm looking for a late model love.
Hello, I'm Charlton Heston, speaking to you today not as president of the National Rifle Association, but in my capacity as president of the Nepalese Rifle Association. You know, whenever there are terrible, regrettable firearms-involved tragedies, like this week's mass shooting of the Nepalese royal family by its designated heir, the knee-jerk types among us start calling for increased state control of our guns. It's become as predictable as tassels on corn stalks, and about as useful a guide to public policy. Because, when you really stop to think about it, the one thing that could have saved the Nepalese royal family is more guns. Guns in the hands of the security guards, guns in the hands of the kitchen help, of the king and queen themselves. You know, if our young royal prince friend had walked into the family dining room last Friday night and seen a dozen or so friendly but stern muzzles looking back at him, he might have thought twice about opening fire. He certainly wouldn't have had the time to turn his weapon on himself. No, that cowardly act was made possible by the good people who would actually try to pry the guns from our cold, dead hands. And don't forget, India, right next door and with much looser gun laws, has never had its royal family gunned down. So emotions are all very fine when it comes to making movies. I've used a few of them myself. But when it comes to America's and Nepal's law-abiding and gun-owning citizens, nothing shoots straighter than the facts. And nothing has more sheer, flesh-rending, bone-shattering impact than the truth. I'm Charlton Heston, reminding you that Nepal proves it again. Guns don't kill royalty. Royalty kills royalty. Thanks for listening.
On the day that she was born, the angels came with bitter disappointment. A lost lamb in the lion's den. To be precarious was her not meant. And sister sweet and daddy dear had that kind of spark that makes you weary. And so she said, and I love you, Len. Hopes grew small and her optimism bleary. And they all said, wow. They all said, what a shame. You're so different. Who's to blame? She said, why don't you let me just shine my own way?
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time for me to read the trades for you. A couple of items. From the frontiers of product placement. You know, I'm gonna interrupt the reading of the trades to just ask the question, who is it in the advertising business that believes we're not surrounded by enough messages yet? I don't think that's what it is. I think they think we're getting too good at screening them out. You know where this race leads. Right here. I'll read it for you. This is Dateline London, and this is from Reuters, so blame the writing on them. Advertisers have come up with a novel ploy to attract pet owners that is not so much scratch and sniff as whiff of woof. British TV channel Animal Planet is using posters scented with canine urine to publicize its pet awards in the hope that dogs will make a beeline for the posters, dragging their owners behind them. Says Animal Planet's commissioning editor, Emma Reed, quote, and I'll use the British pronunciation here, "It is not actual urine, it is the scent of urine. I haven't actually smelt it myself, but I'm told it's lovely for a dog." The posters will be stuck at a dog's eye level on lampposts along favorite walking routes in London, Birmingham, not Birmingham, and Glasgow. Another poster will be at human eye level to catch the attention of owners when their dog stops to sniff. Reed said she did not think humans would be able to detect the scent. Quote, "We're not going to go around stinking up the streets of England." But that's not all. From Advertising Age, Fox Mystery Show slays sponsors. It's murder in the ad business, at least for Taco Bell and Jeep, the first major conspirators in a new program that brings the deadly deed to reality shows. The pair figure prominently in the latest primetime show they hope will be a hit, Fox Network's Murder in Small Town X, a summer series in which contestants compete to solve a fictional murder in a fictional small town against the backdrop of real-life consumer products. Taco Bell will get major product placement visibility. Taco Bell wouldn't disclose the amount of its deal. Executives close to the situation described it as a multi-billion dollar commitment. Daimler Chrysler signed on for the new Jeep Liberty. Details could not be learned about how the vehicle would be featured. Is the person murdered in a Jeep? Oh, I'm sorry. That was a guess. Murdered by a Jeep. No, sorry. Run over by... All right, I'll stop guessing. Media executives said other advertising partners will probably include a soft drink and possibly an automobile fuel company. Yeah, they're popular these days. Product placements in reality or unscripted TV shows have been the hottest trend for advertisers, gaining speed last summer in Survivor, in which 9 advertisers from Target stores to Dr. Scholl's and Pontiac were featured prominently in the series. The plot thickens with the new show. Fox won't give specifics. They're handled by the same part of the company that pays out residuals. Oh, that was an interpolation, sorry. Fox won't give specifics. A Taco Bell restaurant could be a place where contestants would need to find clues to solve the murder. Fox's advertiser lineup represents a significant advance from Temptation Island, a highly rated show that was supported by only a limited range of advertisers. Many were turned off by its steamy content, but apparently murder is better. Oh, that was me talking. Taco Bell has exclusivity in the show as a product placement partner. Rival fast food outlets can only buy commercial time in the program. "We've been looking for media that cut through the clutter," says Debbie Myers of Taco Bell. "It was an interesting way to integrate the brand." Taco Bell's role in the show, she says, is still something of a mystery. "We know there are going to be key scenes that take place in a Taco Bell, but we don't know exactly where. We want that decision to be made in the editing so it makes a good program." She said what Taco Bell doesn't want is for the chain's role to be so intrusive it distracts from the plot. "There are things you can do, such as showing people eating our food, having bags in places." "Murder is unlike other reality shows because it's half scripted and half unscripted." Oh yeah? Check the latest stuff on Survivor, ladies and gentlemen. "Actors will play the role of the townspeople, while some 50 real people will be included in the production, as well as 10 contestants." The show doesn't have an exact launch date yet. Says Tim Spengler, executive VP at Initiative Media of Los Angeles, some of these shows are great opportunities. My sense is that Murder in Small Town X is part of the landscape of the town. It's going to be more organic, unquote. Organic product placement feels so good, doesn't it? It's an era of good feeling, ladies and gentlemen, when I read the trades for you, a copyrighted feature. And yes, Louisville, it is a copyrighted feature. Oh, by the way, Trent Lott also said, James Jeffords, one man has trumped the will of the American people. You shouldn't be saying those things, Trent. It reminds people of stuff. Now, President Bush, the air quote president, came out to California this week, had to do it, met with Governor Gray Davis, grayer all the time, apparently, and it was reported to be an inconclusive meeting and that neither man emerged with anything other than what he came in with. But he didn't leave with less, let's put it that way. Gray Davis wanted the president to impose price caps, temporary price caps, on the skyrocketing wholesale cost of electricity in California. And President Bush desisted, saying price caps never help. They never help to reduce demand or increase supply. Just for comparative purposes, George W. Bush used to be part of the management team, part of the ownership structure of the Texas Rangers professional baseball team. Didn't all the Major League Baseball teams agree on a salary cap to do what? To constrict the marketplace, because otherwise the prices of baseball players would have gone sky high. So it's okay to... All right, you get it. You get it, don't you? Yeah, I guess so. Anyway, the other big news involving President Bush this week, of course, was the news that sneaked out through the Drudge Report and then made it to all the national media and the tabloids, that President Bush's daughter, Jenna, has had her second run-in with the law regarding... purchase of alcohol by her very own self. She's underage in Texas, and she used somebody else's ID. And the cops are investigating. They're talking about filing charges. And there's a lot of debate on the Yak shows about whether it's okay for this story to be a story, because it's a president's child and a thing, and her twin daughter, Barbara, is involved too. And aren't these children entitled to privacy? And there's a lot of bloviating, my favorite new verb, on the subject. But one fact that keeps being not mentioned, it stubbornly refuses to be mentioned, is the fact, which to me justifies this being a story at all. If Jenna Bush does this again, she will go to jail, according to the terms of a law signed into law by her father. That makes it newsworthy. Dad sends his daughter to jail is news no matter who it is, you know? As in the old, remember the old kids bust their parents for smoking pot, those stories in the 80s? This is kind of like the switcheroo. Dad jails girl for drinking. Dad with former drinking problem. Anyway, it's something that might be talked about, you might think, when President 43 places a call to President 41 next here on the show.
Hello. Hey, 41, it's a 43 calling. How you doing?
Hey, youngster, doing all right. You know, Barb is getting a house up in Maine opened up for the summer.
Yeah.
I'm just sitting here reading the first draft of my memoirs.
Memoirs? I didn't know you were writing.
I wasn't, but, you know, there was a book deal.
Yeah.
And the kid wanted to do it, so... Reading his draft.
Mm.
Where are you? At the ranch or the camp?
Ranch. Mr. Cheney wanted to use the camp.
Yeah, Dick always loved that place. They tried to talk me into inviting him up there, though. What the hell? The Secretary of Defense could tell me in Maryland that he couldn't tell me in Washington.
Hey, Hey, listen, 41 got some issues here. I'd like to bounce off of you.
Sure, all ears. Saw the coverage of your California trip, if that's what.
Well, yeah, that's part of it. You know, how do you think I did?
Looked presidential with the governor.
Uh-huh.
Looked environmental with the trees.
Yeah.
Didn't do much better.
You know, you're beginning to lose all your pronouns.
Know it. Don't care all that much.
Okay, listen, no big deal. Lord just dared me to use the word pronouns in a sentence today. So, look, yeah, I think the tone was right, and after the partisanship of, you know, problems aren't solved by one party, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, but, look, only criticism is this.
Yeah.
Next time you go out to California,
uh-huh.
Don't be carrying a goodie bag with nothing in it.
Well, look, see, I thought we had a winner. This came out of Spence Abraham's shop.
Your energy secretary.
There you go. We were ready to propose a tax break for the manufacturers of AA batteries, so Californians would have a place to turn when the lights go out. But Mr. Cheney said that would just encourage people to think the federal government could solve their problems for them, and then they'd lose the will to go nuclear.
Yeah, probably right. Hey, son.
Yeah.
Don't think Dick Cheney wants you running behind his back to bitch to me about things like this. Go to him man to man, why don't you?
Look, 43, I think we have a good overall game plan.
Well,
you know, if I wanted to sweat the details of government, I'd have run for vice president.
Yeah. So, how was Governor Davis in your little meeting? All tough guy.
Well, that's the weird thing. He looked at me like I was Donnie Rumsfeld or something. You know? Almost intimidated, like.
Mm-hmm. Aura.
Huh?
Aura of the presidency. You walk in someplace, some two-bit nobody thinks he's going to show you up like some drunk CEO taking a swing at Muhammad Ali at a cancer dinner, and all of a sudden,
yeah,
fella gets that look in his eyes like he's just had a faith-based hallucination or something, and you know he's been keel-hauled by the aura.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, I got through that meeting okay, but I'm standing there in Sequoia Park.
Yeah, Barb loved that. My son, the environmentalist. That was her big joke for the rest of the week.
And Gail Norton is looking at me funny because, you know, right before we get to the podium, I have the poor judgment to say to her, Sequoia Park, couldn't we sell the naming rights to a bigger company? I mean, I'd never heard of Sequoia. And now,
well, on the tube, she looked deferential, you know.
Yeah.
Camera never lies.
Well, then I'm looking at the prompter,
mm-hmm.
You know, but all I'm thinking about is Jenna. I mean, you know, I'd prefer she pull a Jim Jeffords and just switch parties and go out and pull this kind of teenage crap.
Hey, you weren't exactly Mr. Eagle Scout when you were in college,
no,
43.
I know, but...
Been running for president when you were doing that. You'd have knocked Kitty Dukakis's depression straight off the front page.
All right, listen, you know, when you were in this office, I was giving you the kind of political advice that it could have saved your keister if...
Yeah, if I'd only been willing to send Dan Quayle's Desert Storm inspection chopper through Iraqi airspace.
Well, what you didn't have when the war ended was sympathy. You get Dan Quayle shot down, which is in itself a big plus for your reelection.
Hey,
yeah.
Don't drink the water under the bridge, 43.
Okay, well, my point was that... The best political advice I've gotten from Jenna was her heartfelt plea that I reduce the federal drinking age, which I'll later find out there isn't one. So,
look, I'm sure that Karen and Carl are telling you this, but as long as you don't respond to the stories, there's no story. Now, if you want me to do what I did for you and make a couple phone calls so that the charge disappears, okay, but...
Karen says we can't do that. That's exactly the problem with our situation. We can't take advantage of common sense solutions.
Mm-hmm. What does Laura say?
She says it's my fault. I never talked to the girl.
Yeah, well...
You think I should?
Should what?
Talk to the girl. Or both the girls, you know. Two girls with one stone type deal.
Sure. That won't leak.
Well, I know Jenna won't leak it, but the other one...
Look, 43, you got two tough jobs, being president and raising teenagers. Except that you got a lot more help being the president.
I know it. you know, I just keep wishing I could just ask Mr. Cheney to talk to the girls. But
I'll let you know if Barb has any good advice on the subject.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Get some rest, 43.
You know it, 41.
Possibly related matter, ladies and gentlemen, the White House announced this week it plans to begin serving genetically modified foods at official government functions. Some of us thought they were serving it already. No! The move is intended to head off criticism by environmental and consumer groups that the altered foods are unsafe, says the White House chef, you really can't tell the difference. It may be genetically altered, but it tastes just the same. Why don't we give him a glass of Malathion to drink? It tastes good, too. He says the first family already consumes milk containing bovine growth hormone. I didn't say that. The White House chef says it. And in a sign of how well this White House is handling its diplomatic responsibilities, the new genetically modified food will debut at a state dinner for the Prime Minister of France, where the public is adamantly opposed to genetically modified foods. According to the chef, Daniel Arredo, the menu for the dinner will include pan-seared genetically altered super salmon and Texas-style corn pudding made with Starlink corn. These are traditional Texas recipes, says Arredo, but with a special twist. A spokesman for the French embassy said they were unaware of the White House meal plan. And in the final follow-up, maybe, to Election 2000, the networks and news services that were investigating all the screw-ups by Voter News Service, VNS, in reporting election results, have decided to sign back up with Voter News Service. Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes this edition of Le Show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, over the USEN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world through the Armed Forces Network, and shortwaveville on WBCQ The Planet, 7.415 megahertz. And on your computer, whenever you want it, wherever you want it, at two locations, www.harryshearer.com or www.kcrw.com. And it would be just like going to a White House state dinner and having some super salmon if you'd agree to join with me then. Would you? Alrighty, thank you very much. Email address to this broadcast, in case you feel the need to respond, is lemail, L-E-M-A-I-L, at interworld.net. And you folks in Louisville, no attachments, please. No, it's not just for you. It's just everybody else knows it already. Thank you. The show comes to you from Century of Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of SAS, a satellite service of KCRW Santa Monica, a community recognized around the world as the home of the homeless. I'm not on the air in New York, so this ain't a plug. See you at Carnegie Hall Monday night.